All right, we are back here on this beautiful morning. We have with us on the phone Brother Jim Waters, the president of BIPS here, Bluegrass Institute in the state of Kentucky. Brother Jim, it's good to have you with us this morning, our brother.
Hey, it's great to be here on this warm, balmy, sunny summer day.
It is toasty outside, ain't it?
It's 6 degrees. I don't know. That's what I had last count here. But no, it's a great day. The sun is shining, though, yes. So no matter what, the sun is always shining, right?
Yeah, so. And there's no white stuff falling from the sky today. So.
Well, you didn't get my spiritual point there, too, but that's okay. The sun is always shining, right? even while this radical left-wing absolutely leftist presidency comes to a close. Unbelievable. Preemptively pardoning people in the White House today. It's just unbelievable. But it's a new day. Come noon today, this is a different country. It's a different place. And we have Martin Luther King Day. We have Inauguration Day. All in one, and we have this segment is too. So it's all great time. Great to be with you.
Well, it's great to be with you as well. I know it's a big day in the United States of America. Just as there's a lot going on in the state of Kentucky, in the middle of a session right now. It's a short session, so I don't know. You can speak into whichever one you want to.
Yeah.
You can go in a federal or a state. Whatever you want to do, Brother Jim.
Actually, and they're really not exclusive. And by the way, if you hear a little background noise here, I'm in my traveling office here at the Panera Bread restaurant today because of the scheduling. But hey, there is some concern about what a Trump presidency can mean for Kentucky. Some of the tariff policies that the president-elect has discussed are of some concern to products that are produced here in Kentucky. But, you know, I think you have to remember that Trump has really used this as more of a negotiating tool to try to improve America's economy and really put the focus back on what's best for our nation. So I think there's a lot of people in a wait-and-see attitude in terms of how some of his policies regarding tariffs on products that we import and or export, and how that's going to work and how that's going to affect Kentucky. I would say I don't think there's a lot of concern right now about this, especially when you look at election night and the fact that Kentucky was the first state to go for Trump and to be called for Trump. So his presidency, I think, is also going to mean some very positive things for our state. And, of course, the fact that the Republicans have both the House and Senate, it could mean, for example, that we could get some school choice policies here. President Trump has already indicated that if Congress passes school choice legislation, a federal policy, he'll sign it. And so I think we could see a federal tax credit scholarship program that could be part of a budget reconciliation package that wouldn't even require a separate vote. The legislation's already been written, and it's very similar to what Kentucky passed a couple of years ago. I guess the satisfying thing about all this is that, like my grandmother used to say, but with all due apologies to PETA, there's more than one way to skin a cat. So the opponents of education freedom here have been dancing on the grave of school choice, but I think that could be pretty premature. If school choice passes federally, then Kentucky's teachers union, its bureaucrats, its radicals, its leftists won't be able to do anything about it at all. They cannot stop it. So I think this is, I think we should take note of some of these positive things that a new administration could mean for our state. By the way, just a note on this, that the U.S. Supreme Court on numerous occasions has upheld the constitutionality of these types of tax credit scholarship programs. That's why our opponents, you know, sued in state court, the stop our school choice amendment. The only way they could stop it here is if a judiciary biased against education freedom was hearing the case, and that's what we had here with Judge Philip Shepard and the former Kentucky Supreme Court. What still remains to be seen is whether the new Supreme Court, which has several new members, what approach they're going to take. We're still waiting for them to hold the hearings on the charter school funding bill that was passed a couple of years ago that authorized some charter schools to also be created in Louisville and Northern Kentucky so that we could come back and see and really analyze how they work for our state. So I think I wanted to mention, you know, with this being Inauguration Day, I don't think we can ignore the impact that this change in administration, which is one of the biggest changes I've ever seen in my lifetime politically. Certainly when Ronald Reagan became president, that was also a sea change, but I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like the dramatic change that we're going to see in the first 100 days of the Trump presidency. I think you're going to really be amazed at how much gets done here in our country. And I think it's also an indication that the new president really did sort of have learn a lot of things during his first term. You know, he really kind of got off very slowly and stumbled out of the gate. And it really hurt, I think, his chances both of a more successful presidency and a reelection. But this time, that's not happening. I think he's got one of the greatest teams of people that I've ever seen. Certainly, Reagan's would rival his, but when you start talking about the team that he has and the expertise that he has, the people that he has, it has been less political, less partisan than I've ever seen. It's been much more about what's in the best interest of our country. If I can, and if I may, I want to get to the session, but if I may, I would like to also point out that, again, that this is Martin Luther King Day as well, that we celebrate the life and the impact that this civil rights leader had on our nation. And, you know, it's amazing to me that many of the people who will sort of talk in flowery philosophical terms about racial equality, about civil rights, will excuse the fact that we're doing such a poor job in our public education system, particularly with our minority students. And in the state of Kentucky, in our largest school district, right up the road from you in Jefferson County, last year, well, actually 2022, which is the latest year that we have numbers for, only 13% of our black fourth graders in that school district were reading proficiently, compared to 40% of white students. And here, how about this? Only 4% of eighth grade black students were doing math proficiently, compared to 28% of white students. Not only are whites not doing a great job there, we have a majority of our white students who are performing well, which, by the way, is the story across our state. But look at the gaps, a 27-point gap between black and white students in reading and a 24-point gap between black and white students in math in eighth grade. So I don't think this was what Martin Luther King envisioned when he talked about, little black boys and white and little black boys and girls sitting down and being educated in the same school as little white boys and girls. I think he really did believe in education, and unfortunately, it's our minority students, it's our black students who are being left behind by this current public education system. And I know there was concern about the school choice amendment among Christians, among conservatives. They don't want to see government involved in telling people what they can or can't do in their schools. And I get it. I think that was a concern that we have to communicate better about. We have to find a way to address that. But on the other hand, we know from across the country that it is charter schools and schools of choice, in many cases, public charter schools, public schools of choice, that are addressing this achievement gap, that are closing this achievement gap. We've increased spending greatly here in Kentucky. That has not solved that problem. But the fact when you give parents a choice and you try to give a child the best education that best prepares that child for their future is when we begin to see those gaps close and we begin to see improvement in education. So we're going to continue to work on holding our system accountable. The Bluegrass Institute is going to work on bringing more transparency, more accountability to our system, and I think that's going to be help us in the future make the case for more options for parents. So I know I'm doing a lot of the talking here, but if it's okay, we'll go ahead and move to the legislative session. I know you mentioned that, and one of the things I wanted to mention was that, and since we haven't talked for a few weeks, the legislature came back into session, as you mentioned, brother, in what's called a short session, and that means that this is as being in an odd year, the 2025 legislative session, we're not going to deal with a budget. The budgets are dealt with every other year in the even-numbered years, and so that has a lot of consequence for this session. For example, in a short session, the legislature cannot vote to spend dollars unless two-thirds of the legislature agrees to what we call open the budget for spending. Now, the big spenders in Kentucky, of course, are always pressuring our lawmakers to open the budget, and they're never satisfied with the amount of spending or the amount of taxation that goes on in our state. But fortunately, I've been told by our House leadership that there is no appetite, or very little appetite, for opening the budget for considering spending. Of course, we never say never about any of these things because we don't really know what's going to happen here before the end of March. But the session will be over by the end of March. Now, one other thing about this session and the short sessions that I'd like for people to know is how it works. The legislature came back into session on January 5th, I believe it was, the first Tuesday after the first Monday, which is the constitutional dictation for when the session begins. And they spent that first week, they usually, in years past, have spent it basically organizing their caucuses. Now, the caucuses are simply the parties, and of course in Frankfort right now in the General Assembly, the Republicans hold the majority in both
We're
the House
Box
and
Radio
in fact,
Network.
They hold the super
Elevated
majority
talk and,
have used that to override many of the governor's vetoes. But that's the Republican caucus, and the Democratic caucus will organize as well with their leadership. Much of that work in recent years has been done actually before the session began, so that when they come back into session, they can really hit the ground running with legislation. And that's what the Republicans have done since they've taken over as the majority party, and they control the flow and the tempo of the session. So important to know that the Kentucky House of Representatives this year already has voted to reduce the state's individual income tax rate from 4% to 3.5%. That will begin in 2026. So what happens is, they did that in the first week. The legislature met during the first week of January, and now they're off. They adjourn for the rest of the month. So they will come back into session the first Tuesday in February, and then they will have the biggest part of their session then. But even during the first week of the session, in the first week of January, the House already voted to reduce the income tax rate, and then right before the recess, right before they adjourned, the Senate Budget Committee also voted to accept the House's legislation, and so they will be voting on that as an entire Senate. That will go to the floor of the Senate. When they come back into session, I expect that to be one of the first things they will do, is to reduce the individual income tax rate. So this is important for our state. I know that people tend to want to talk about some of the more emotional, dramatic issues, but I would point out that in 2022, the House passed the legislation that began to incrementally reduce the income tax rate, just like Indiana is doing. And we've moved away from these punitive income taxes, and instead the state is relying more on the sales tax, which is a pro-growth economic policy, as we see in states like Indiana and Tennessee and other states that Kentucky competes against for growth in their economy and in their population. So we see that that this is actually happening in our state. I would just say that opponents of this policy have claimed that reducing the income tax rate will lead to budget shortfalls. It's going to affect our ability to fund essential services like education, like health care, like critical infrastructure projects. But I would just point out that since we've been reducing our income tax rate, Kentucky has had record revenues, record budget surpluses. We have the highest and strongest rainy day fund and reserves fund that we've ever had in the history of our Commonwealth, which the economic experts say is one of the best defenses against a tax increase or against financial problems and financial ill, is a strong rainy day fund. And we have one of the strongest now in the country, and it was only 5 years ago that we had one of the weakest. So our legislators have really been, I think, careful with the way they spend the dollars. They have spent dollars from the reserve for one-time projects. The opponents of this, big government types, they want the lawmakers to spend the money on government programs to create new government, new funding for government. But our legislators, thankfully, have been very conservative in their approach. And as a result of it, Kentucky is in the best fiscal situation that we've ever been in our history. We have the best economy. We've had the most economic growth. Our governor is out there running around the state talking about how he's presided over record growth. And yet, of course, many of these policies that have led to that growth, he was opposed to. He is vetoed. But still, like a good politician, he's taking credit for things the legislature did, which is fine. Who cares who gets the credit? As long as we're moving in the right direction, I don't really care. So, but I do know our lawmakers, it's a point of contention with them that they've done a lot of hard work on these issues, and he's grabbed a lot of the credit. So we should give credit where credit is due. But this is all very important to our future, and it's important for Christians to understand. You know, the more money that we have in our pockets and in our bank accounts, the more money we have to give, the more money we have to invest, the more resources we have to provide for our families and for our communities. So all these things have real-life consequences, and I again want to give a shout-out to our legislators, Senator Steve Meredith there in that area, and the representatives in that area have also been very supportive of most of these policies. So I think that's really important for us to know what's going on.
Amen. Well, I think that there does seem to be a lot of things happening, and has anybody ever thought about, I'm just asking, you know, has anybody ever thought about a usage tax federally instead of a federal income tax?
Well, I think we have some usage taxes. That's a good question. The way our federal tax system works, though, is a little bit different. But that's a good question. And I think if I may add about what the states are doing, I think by moving more toward usage taxes and what we would call consumption taxes, we are encouraging growth, because an income tax, whether at the federal or local, state or local level, an income tax is really a punitive tax. It punishes people for being more productive. And that's not what we want to do. We want to encourage that productivity. So when we lower the income tax rate, it encourages that. But yeah, at the federal level, you know, of course, you have to make a certain amount of money before you actually do pay federal taxes. And so, you know, there's some trade-off there. But yeah, that's a good question. I'm not, honestly, I'm not as familiar with the federal tax code. But I do know that in general, economists, free market economists, talk about the negative impact that income taxes have. And so the more we can move away from that, the better. And, you know, but, you know, when you look at the Trump tax cuts, and that's why it's so important to continue with these, is, you know, a lot of that has to do, I think, with reducing the income tax that Americans pay. And there again, that's a recognition that that's a pro-growth policy. That's the kind of policy that encourages people to work harder, to produce more, rather than trying to avoid those tax increases by producing less, or avoid those kinds of taxes. So one other thing, if I may, on this issue, there's going to be a big debate in our legislature. I don't know how much of it will occur this year, but it's been an ongoing debate about giving local communities more say over how you know, tax dollars are raised and spent, and giving, for example, local communities the ability to raise the local sales tax. And we're not necessarily opposed to that idea as long as there is offsetting tax cuts in at the state level. So what we don't want is we don't want taxpayers' burdens to increase, and that can increase at the federal level, state level, or local level. We don't want it to increase wherever that increase might come from. So if we're going to give local communities the ability to enact, say, a one-cent sales tax increase or a one-cent sales tax locally to build sidewalks or do some kind of project, then what we want to see is the occupational tax, for example, at the local level, reduced. And the occupational tax is a local income tax. Yeah. So again, income taxes discourage growth. So what we don't want to see the occupational tax, for example, remain the same and just give local governments the ability to tack on a one-cent sales tax. We want to see that offset. I think occupational taxes have a constitutional problem anyhow, because people are paying those taxes if they simply work in the community. They may not live there. They may not vote there. Their representatives may not be there. So in a sense, I think it's a form of taxation without political representation.
Yeah.
But the bigger issue for us right now is we don't want taxpayer burdens to increase. And, you know, if it increases at the local level and it increases overall, then because of that, then we need to address wherever that might happen. I am a little concerned. I know Representative Meredith there in Michael Meredith, has been working on this. So I hope he will understand that we don't want to see local taxpayer burden increases. He represents Brownsville in that area, but we don't want to see the overall tax burden increase, and we will oppose that vigorously. However, we will not oppose allowing local communities to have more say in tax dollars and how they raise them and spend them if that doesn't add to taxpayer burden.
Well, one more question. I know this is a quick one. We only have about 2 minutes left, Brother Jim.
Sure.
And this is like a business one, because I know you stay on top of small businesses and helping industrial growth in Kentucky, and that's one of y'all's things with policy-driven stuff. What's your take on all of the behind-the-scenes federally going on with the Corporate Transparency Act? Do you think that's going to be repealed and overturned? Because I feel like that's going to be a humongous burden to small business that may not even know about it, who's could possibly be fined an astronomical amount of money for something that a lot of people see as unconstitutional anyway. So Have you looked into that or anything, kept up with it, how it's going to affect our state or just small business owners?
Well, it's certainly something we can talk about maybe in our next program, and I'll have some thoughts about that. But just in general, I think there's a balance, you know, transparency. You know, we certainly, and when it comes to government activity, we've been big proponents of allowing taxpayers to see what's happening, you know, so they can make good decisions and so that we can make the case for reform, you know. But we want the right kinds of reforms, right? So we don't want to, we want to encourage growth. We want to encourage businesses. On the other hand, we do have some challenges in our country with big business, right? Big business, big pharma, and big government. And I think we're going to have to address this. I think Trump is a guy who understands the carrot and the stick and the balance that's needed there. And, you know, Brother Ron used to talk a lot about balance, you know, and I think that applies in the natural as well as the spiritual. So
yeah.
But maybe we could talk a little more about that in our next broadcast. I'd be happy to do that.